Hey, welcome back to our podcast here. My name is Felix Notnagel. I'm here with Alex Middleton. Today we decided to talk about Alliance Data Systems, ticker ADS, $13 billion market cap. What does the company do? I would say they have like about three business units.
Yeah.
Card services, so just issuing private label credit cards. Then they have Epsilon, which is their data gathering, analysis of it, and like direct consumer marketing.
It's kind of like a marketing agency,
yeah.
Consulting arm, yeah.
Okay. And I guess card services is about 60% of their profits, Epsilon 20%, mm-hmm. and then another 20% for their loyalty program,
mm-hmm.
Air Miles.
Yeah, and then they have brand loyalty, which is based in Europe as well.
Yeah. Air Miles is Canada. We know that well.
Yes, so that's right. Loyal Air Miles collectors.
You maybe, not me, but I see lots. I know lots.
Yeah.
Do you own any of the stock?
No.
No? Yeah, me neither. It's good to research and, you know, maybe eventually it gets to a price where I'm willing to buy.
Mm-hmm. It's good to, let's just talk about how we came about this stock. You know, there's a website called Dataroma that many listeners might have heard of, and attracts a bunch of, well-known investors' portfolios, at least their U.S.-based portfolios. And one investor that we kind of followed together is Alan Meacham.
Meacham.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I've heard it pronounced several different ways. Yeah. Anyways, maybe you can call in sometime and tell us how to pronounce his name. So he had a big position built up about maybe 3 months ago. And when it was, trading below $200. Now it's trading around $230, $235 maybe. And I noticed it and recommended maybe we should take a look at it.
Yeah.
Just to see what it's all about.
And I think it went down from like, it was over 300 at one point.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that a few years ago, 2015?
Probably three, four years ago.
Yeah. Okay.
And I guess since then, probably earnings or so are like up 50%,
mm-hmm.
and stock price down. So kind of definitely always makes it an interesting situation.
Yeah.
That's sure. Probably a big reason why Alan Meacham
kind of bought it.
Put a pretty big position.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell me what you like about the company?
They got some very attractive, types of businesses as part of the company. If you look at them individually, their credit cards, private label, it's essentially banking, they're borrowing and loaning money out, and it's a simple business, right? Banking's attractive and it's not really going away anytime soon unless you're a Bitcoin believer or something like that. But, again, it's one of those things, it's a simple business, but it's not easy to do well because it takes a lot of restrictive behavior in good times to make sure you always loan conservatively, mm-hmm. and not stretch earnings and by loaning to less creditworthy individuals. So it's attractive business, but I think you just have to be careful with that, what part of the bubble you're in and when you're going to invest. And the marketing agency, some of their peers like Omnicom and WPP have been having trouble, but it's cash flow generative.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of that stuff's build out time material, so there's profit built in, so it's not a lot of risk there, not a lot of growth either. And then the point stuff, which is if they're a well used loyalty point system, it does well. But
I guess I would add, I definitely like the growth rate they had over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Impressive growth. Mm-hmm. I don't know, 15% annual or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's nice. And I found, from researching it, I found it was a very sticky business. They really did not seem to have a lot of customer turnover.
Mm.
And, I don't know exactly why that is. Or they're claiming that they have all this data on all these consumers, 40 small retailers that can't do their own kind of loyalty or kind of cards and stuff like that. And for these businesses, it's hard to kind of say, no, we're not interested in working with you anymore.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that. And I think it's a booming industry, like credit card business, right? It's just like, there's heavy competition. I think Chase kind of put out like a credit card with all these rewards, like just to sign up, and then other credit card companies kind of do their counter offers to customers. And I don't know, I won some Visa, I had really good returns with that.
Yeah.
Also, like, I think it's probably more than fully priced now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good industry.
Yeah.
What do we not like about it?
I think I mentioned like the cyclical nature of credit. Mm-hmm. And the company, you know, if you look over the past 10 years, has become a lot more dependent on the growth in their private label credit cards and the growing of their account balances with their customers, right?
Huh.
And I think, you know, 10 years ago, they were more dependent on the Air Miles program for revenue, and it was more diversified back then, I think. And now I think if they're addicted to this growth, it could lead them into a path where it's just, you know, maybe they're taking a little more risk, you know, trying to grow, say, the average purchase price or average balance on their credit card. And it's hard to tell where they're at with that right now. I know recently there was they put out a report where it wasn't too favorable in terms of like their delinquencies or defaults for the past 3 months. So I don't know if that's a trend yet, but
seems to be going up.
Yeah,
for the industry.
I think they're accounting like parts of the too. Yeah, and, yeah, yeah.
I found the same thing. I found it hard to evaluate that risk behind that. I think that definitely is exposure to subprime.
Yeah.
So it kind of feels like they probably, like if people can't get regular credit cards like Visa or something like that, it's probably pretty easy for them to sign up comparatively for a store credit card.
Yeah, I would.
So yeah, that's something a little bit concerning to me. And the leverage probably
that's
associated with running a
kind of a bank type thing,
credit card business or subprime loan stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
competitive. Do you think I think it's competitive, very competitive. Probably.
I think the banking portion of the credit card side is really competitive.
Yeah.
I mean, seems like banks are always trading off, you know, their credit card portfolios, selling them off, buying one, it's attractive to get into, right? And there's a lot of competitors. There's a lot of American banks out there that are doing this type of work, and so they're not just competing against Synchrony, or they have a lot of cities doing the private label stuff, and
to a certain extent,
competing
against Visa, Amex, I guess. Yeah. Like not direct competitor, I would say, like not for private label, but
it's a
payment option, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I guess there, like what I found interesting is was the kind of for the small business, the incentives to use ADS are pretty big. Like first of all, like all that data collection that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And then second of all, apparently they don't pay fees. Like on a Visa purchase, they pay like a 2%, 3% processing fee.
Yeah.
But if you use like a kind of private label credit card, they don't have to pay a fee.
Oh, for the store doesn't
have to pay a fee.
Hmm.
So they can give their like loyal customers some discounts. And so I found that quite interesting. So I can see how there's like a lot of incentives for all these businesses to use ADS.
Yeah.
I mean, they could also use Synchrony, but I think ADS kind of caters more towards small businesses.
Yeah.
And kind of does also more the data collection and analysis for them.
Right.
And targeted marketing. So I don't know to what extent Synchrony does that.
Yeah.
And that's a bit hard to get from like reading the annual reports, you know, that it's kind of, their CEO kind of puts it out there as the big competitive advantage, Epsilon, and
right.
but it's hard to really kind of know for sure if they have this additional competitive advantage.
Well, that was, I think, what part of Andrew Left's article was about. He was saying there's not really as much crossover business as management would like you to believe, right? Yeah. And
it's a bit hard to judge, I find.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, like, I feel like there is synergies between all those businesses.
Yeah.
It's just how much of a benefit they're getting out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure Synchrony and I'm sure every other bank is analyzing the exact same data that, you know, and maybe ADS is just better at it. And making more money off it by, you know, turning, you know, getting some consulting and business on the side as well. And that's helping their bottom line. But for me, it was hard to tell exactly what the benefit was.
I found that hard as well.
Yeah,
so I would say the growth rates kind of indicate that they have some kind of competitive advantage.
Yeah.
And also the customer retention rate being very high. So,
but you think the growth rate would be reflective in their consulting business as well, but their growth rate in that has not been that high.
That's a very good point.
Right? I mean, they've been adding up a lot of, building the credit cards business, but the marketing has pretty much, they've grown slightly faster than Omnicom, but it is smaller than Omnicom too. So maybe you'd expect it's got more of that growth niche. And I'm pretty sure if you looked at Omnicom and took out that niche of where they do data analytics and that type of consulting work, they'd probably have a higher growth rate than their more traditional businesses as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Do you have any opinions on the management?
I don't think I really have any opinions on management. I mean, I think there was probably more clarity in terms of that I would like to see in the 10K that would, an investor would probably want to know, like we were just talking about the connection between all their businesses and how, say a dollar earned on in their credit card business reflects their other businesses as well, right? And
I saw the exact same thing.
A little more transparency around that.
Yeah, that's what I thought. There was some transparency issues. I was reading the reports. And I'm like, oh yeah, I fully understand the business. Yeah. It makes so much sense.
Yeah.
I was struggling a bit with it. On the positive side, I would say it created tons of shareholder value in the past.
Yeah.
Had big share buybacks in 2008 or 2009 when the market was cratering. Another thing I didn't like was the core earnings per share.
Right,
when you look at it in that matrix, it's like, I don't know what they're claiming, like doubles their earnings compared to GAAP earnings.
Mm-hmm.
But then they're taking out share like payments in shares, which is like ridiculous. It's a cost for the shareholder. You can't tell me like, oh, but I'm paying all this money in shares, so therefore it's not a cost to you,
right?
And you actually have higher earnings,
right?
So that's just when I see that, it just kind of doesn't
misleading
give, it doesn't give me a good feeling about management, like,
right?
And also they're counting all of amortization back in, like, when they're looking at what's their earnings, the true earnings power of the business, which I think is aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And
When I was looking through the 10Ks too, like they reported each division's EBITDA, but they didn't really break it down by, earnings really. And so, it's just transparent. It seems like they're very selective in what they're showing people and what looks good, right? And
the whole EBITDA thing is kind of funny as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of bank do you evaluate based on EBITDA?
Yeah.
Like, earnings before interest.
Like, your main cost is interest.
Yeah. Like, what's the point of that? I don't understand it. I don't think that makes any sense.
I don't know. I didn't really look, but I don't see it. I don't know if they've ever addressed that in any of their conference calls or quarterly calls it off. But
I read that they're saying, oh, it gives, it's for internal metrics to see how the business is doing. And also it gives investor a good idea to use it in combination with earnings per share and stuff to evaluate. But I don't know.
But then if they're saying that, then why are they just reporting divisional EBITDA but not reporting earnings?
I don't know. It's very...
Yeah.
It's suspect. Like,
I don't feel things too like well when about you, it. When you sometimes you just can't put your finger on a company and that doesn't quite make you comfortable.
Yeah.
But your experience in seeing something like that kind of gives you that feeling for a reason, right? And
if any moat competitors would kind of...
I think their air miles program's a moat. Like, well, it is. It's kind of like a network moat. As long as they can keep their main anchor customers, Bank of Montreal and as long as you have that one anchor customer for points, at least it's.
They seem pretty diversified to me on points.
Yeah.
Like Shell Canada, the big business partner. So
yeah.
Like Aeroplan was super focused on Air Canada, and the moment they dropped out, it just made the stock crater. Which is, on this business, it's 20% of their business is their loyalty programs, right? So I think that this seems pretty diversified. I'm not too concerned about it. Seems like a good business.
Yeah, and it's not a huge portion. Yeah, it's not a huge portion of their business. But if management says there's a lot of synergies between all these businesses, you think that loss of that would reflect on, everything else. But Air Miles is only Canada, right? So how much is a percentage? How much credit card businesses or finance charges are they earning from Canada itself?
Mm. Yeah. I feel the credit card business has a moat.
Yeah.
Like just from the numbers that I see.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the question is, are they lowering their lending standards? Is that how they're having all this growth and it comes back to hurt eventually?
They've been growing double digits or mid-teens, for a while now. And even if the U.S. economy growing at 4% or at most.
Probably less.
It was 4.1% today announced, but it's like, how much further can they grow consumer spending on their cars at that rate when GDP is growing at 4%? So they have to get new portfolios, like credit card portfolios, like buy them from other companies, or they're going to have to increase spending on their existing ones, right?
Mm.
So
there's probably some room to grow to new vendors that maybe don't have private label credit cards. I think that's happening to a large extent.
Maybe. It could happen, and then also, the bigger they get, they're focused on the kind of SME market. Like, eventually, you sign up a new small business, it's not going to make a huge difference into a $13 billion cap company in terms of new revenue. So, I think the point is, it's going to be more difficult for them to grow in the future, I think, and it's a question if they can sustain those rates.
Quite possible. I personally don't think it would drop off the cliff, like the growth rate. It's been growing pretty significantly for a long time. I think it will slow down.
But last recession, it dropped their revenue from credit card services dropped 25%.
Yeah, that was a blip in the big picture.
No, I'm saying, but it can drop.
Mm. Free cash flow use, good. No concern.
No, so. They seem to do some...
Invest in growth and buy back shares. So they started a small dividend, which is not really that big of a deal in terms of cash flow use. Mm-hmm. Find it always actually more attractive when they reinvest into the business and growth or buying back shares than dividends. But it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think it's worth?
Let me just talk about I can talk about how I valued it
first.
So I valued each entity separately and just kind of did some parts.
Okay.
So pretty much I valued the marketing business and the loyalty business kind of, you know, a small amount of growth, right? And so I did, I think, 8 to 10 EBITDA on for them to evaluate. And I think their combined EBITDA is around 730 to 750 million. Mm-hmm. So 8 to 10. And then I took the EBITDA of their credit card services, added back into interest, and then multiplied that about by 10 and came up with a rough evaluation between a market cap of 10 billion to about $11.5 billion, which would be like $180 to $220 per share.
Okay, that's what you think it's worth.
That's what the range I think it's worth right now.
Okay.
I can't get any more specific than that because there's a lot of questions around, like that we mentioned, you know, the risk that they've taken on in terms of credit worthiness. Yeah.
Okay.
I applied a discount, like a 25% margin of safety on the credit card business's valuation right now.
Would there be any price where you're like interested in buying this business?
I would look at, if it got below 200, I would start like taking a look at it a lot more seriously.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm thinking of what the price, what I think it's kind of roughly worth in the market, and then looking at a 20, 30, 35% discount in terms of buying.
Yeah.
So for me, what I thought, and yeah, I was really struggling with evaluating this business. So for me, I thought it was on the low end. I think it's worth at least 10 times gap earnings, which would be at like $14 a share.
Yeah.
Would be $140 per share.
Yeah.
That's what I think it's minimum worth, because I think it's seems a better business than like Synchrony Financial or maybe some other competitors, which they traded like 12 times earnings.
Yeah.
10, something like that. So I think 10 times minimum. And then on the high end, I thought, I kind of looked at what are the earnings, maybe putting in back some amortization charges, and
yeah,
it came in around like 900 million to a billion in kind of earnings for the company.
Yeah.
And I figured it could be, if they can sustain these kind of growth rates, I felt it could be worth like 20 times that.
So 20 billion.
Around 20 billion, which I think I came to, it was like a share price of about $340 per share. So a super wide range, like 140 to 340. Doesn't mean I would buy this company at 340, right? I figured the true value of the company is probably somewhere in between at like $240 a share. And I would probably get interested in buying it at about 2/3 of that. So at around $180, like 160, 180. Yeah, we got to similar places, just a little bit different methodology. Yeah. I feel like I have a really wide range, and, but if you're buying it at like the really lower end of the valuation and you have like a lot of upside, then it might become quite interesting.
Yeah.
So maybe at like 200 or under 200, it might have, like, maybe Alan Meckham had similar train of thought, and that's when he went in.
Yeah.
Now it's trading at 230, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe I thought it should be a little bit lower even to get interesting.
So is $130 your worst case scenario? Assessment?
Yeah, 140, something like that.
Right.
But the worst case scenario to me is they go bankrupt.
Yeah.
They have huge losses on their credit card portfolio.
Anything that does some sort of banking could.
Yeah. Could, but.
Yeah.
I think it's a better business than an average bank, which they trade a lot of times around a PE of 12. So if you can get that business at a PE of 12, maybe they have a little bit higher risk of blowing up than the average bank, but
would you ever put, what's the most amount of your portfolio would you ever put in a stock at this?
At like 160, 180, I'd probably put around 5% of my portfolio, not higher. And if it goes a lot lower than that, and I feel like nothing has changed on the business much, you know, it's not like defaults are like getting out of, like just going crazy, then, you know, then maybe up to 10, maximum 10 ever. Mm-hmm. It's just too leveraged, too exposed to subprime lending.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. They do sell off their, they securitize their debt. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big part of their business is packaging and getting rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, mentioned that in the 10K is one of the major risks of the business is if the market for securitizing that debt were to dry up, then mm-hmm. it would leave them, restrict them on you know, their business.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's certainly interesting when you can borrow at like 4.5% or so and then lend it out at over 20.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad
business. I think it's crazier to think that people are actually paying 20% on their credit cards.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend anyone to kind of sign up for these and keep a, like carry a balance on this.
Yeah.
But you know, doesn't mean it's like a bad business to own, because in the end people are still doing it.
Yeah, I mean people do it for various reasons and everyone's in a different financial situation, but I don't think we're going to do it anytime soon. I think I did it once when I was in university, paid interest on a credit card. That's it. Yeah.
Mm. I pay when I sometimes forget about my balance, but otherwise I'd always pay it off.
Yeah.
Do you think it's an above average business, below average price? Any opinions on that?
Not really. I think it's an average price right now. It's nothing that I'm not excited about it.
Mm.
I think it is a above average business if it's done well and done right, and it seemed like they've been doing the right things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they've had 10 years of running this business and they've done it really well.
Yeah.
So if nothing implodes, they've done it. I just would prefer some more transparency to make myself more comfortable with the company. But you know, banking itself is a good business, so it's if it gets down to $200, I'll start taking a look at it a little bit more. And
I don't have too much to add to that. I think probably above average business price seems kind of fair.
Mm-hmm.
Really depends how fast they keep growing, and it's kind of hard to say. So
it's not
a price where I'm like, yeah, it's dirt cheap. So interest in the business, 1 to 10.
I'd say 6 right now.
That's what I had as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We'll see. There's other stuff that I'm looking at right now that are a little more exciting. But
good, you can let me know later.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to add? I don't.
Yeah, it's not even. You know, sometimes I kind of like suggest. You know, after looking at a business, I'll suggest like people can add it to a group of 5 stocks, you know, that they think is undervalued in anticipation that 3 will perform well and 2 don't really do anything. But I right now, I don't even recommend that for this right now. I mean, I don't think it's, just have no great feeling.
Yeah.
Strong feeling about it one way or another.
Yeah, I agree. So it's one of these times where I wouldn't be surprised if this returns 10 to 15% over the next 10 years, which would be really good returns. I wouldn't be surprised, but it's just, you know, if you don't feel that comfortable, then just pass. There's so many other opportunities.
That's right. Yeah. You don't have to
I don't
buy everything or have an opinion on everything.
Yeah. I don't have anything else to add.
All right. No.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. Was fun. Good episode. Thank you.
Talk to you again soon.
Bye. Disclaimer. This podcast does not constitute investment advice. It is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Do your own due diligence and use the information provided at your own risk.